usurping light from water, water from light. Is it all part of the same equation? Transfiguration and Vartabar. That's what we'll be talking about today. This is Father Voskin, priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the physical, the psychological, and everything in between. This is episode number 477 of The Next Step, and I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. During this 10th year of broadcasting, we here at epostle.net stay firm to our commitment to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Of course they sell stuff. They all sell stuff. Right? All stores sell something. Stuff. Every store. That's definition, right? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Hey, how you doing? Glad you're all here with us. I want to start off today with a big shout out to a dear friend in Armenia who is celebrating his birthday. It's probably past by the time this thing comes out. But to our dear friend Aram, it's been a long time. And yesterday, or actually early today, I saw that he celebrated a birthday. And he is one of our listeners in Armenia who religiously, every week, by the time he gets out to Armenia, I guess it's Friday mornings, but he says that every Friday morning he sits by his computer, downloads it, and listens to The Next Step. Anyway, big shout out to him, Aram, wishing you all the best. Health and happiness always. And some of you may know him. He goes back. We go back quite a while. Actually, 15 years ago, we produced an album together called Focused Vision. And believe it or not, until today, it is so popular. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Cue it up. Yeah. Listen to this. Feel the energy in there? I mean, every song is like that. Energetic. It's the way the Armenian liturgy should be celebrated. Anyway, that is off of an album called Focus Vision, which Aram produced back in 2002. It's exactly 15 years. Okay, it's hard to believe. But we had so much fun producing that. It was a spiritual journey, but you know what the fun part about it is? As you can tell from the voices, they were all young kids. They were all teenagers. Now, how do you get teenagers to sing the Divine Liturgy and have fun at it at the same time? I guess you can, there's many ways of getting them to sing it. Yeah, tons of ways of getting them to sing it. You know, you could bribe them, but to have fun at it as well? Ah, that's the measure of the talent. That's what really counts. These kids came into that studio. We would get them together. We had so much fun singing the Divine Liturgy. And it is a beautiful album that just it's full of energy. There's no other way of describing it. In fact, so much so that today, I believe it's second or third printing as a CD, but today you go into many of the Armenian homes or even non-Armenian homes, but because there are so many here in Southern California, so many Armenians, that many of the convalescent homes, the what we would call senior living centers, have Armenian occupants. And this CD is inside each and every one of them, and they play them every week. I've been at some of these homes where people will say, hey, we recognize your voice, and then somebody will say, yeah, that's the one who did the CD. Anyway, they love it because it's high energy. It's young people singing the Divine Liturgy. Hey, and I would imagine that as you get to be older and older, which all of us are heading that way, I mean, you would welcome some kind of that high energy, and they do. So Focused Vision is the name of that CD, and my dear friend Aram in Armenia, happy birthday. Wishing you all the best of health and happiness today and always. We'll look forward to seeing you in Armenia pretty soon. Today we've got a great show for you. We're going to be picking up on some themes that we've kind of left off. And in particular, because last Sunday was a feast called Vartavar. And I'm going to be talking about Vartavar usurping the Transfiguration. You say, who's usurping who? We're going to have fun with this, too. Oh, yeah, I did tell you about a story. It was interesting because this morning I woke up, and as I get ready for my walk, I turn on the news and try to pick up some bits and pieces on TV as I get dressed. And this morning there was an interesting ad. There was a guy saying that everything must go in our store. Everything is on sale and everything must go. And I thought about that for a moment. Isn't that true for every store? I mean, I'm sure you've heard it, right? They advertise. They come out and, you know, this is Labor Day, this is Memorial Day, this is President's Day, and everything in our store is on sale and must be sold. Everything must go. Now think about it for a moment. I was just waking up and I thought about it. Isn't that true any time of the year? Isn't that true every single day in the life of a store? Everything is on sale. Yeah, everything must be sold. What kind of thing is that? Everything must be sold. Well, why else would you start a store? Why else would you open a store? To sell things, right? Everything must be sold. And everything is on sale, right? You sell things. It's for sale. Somehow we've gotten the image that because it's on sale that there's a discounted price. But that's not what they're saying, are they? Saying everything is on sale, everything must be sold. Okay. You won't find me arguing that. Yeah. Okay, everything must be sold. Now, some of you that know where I go with these kind of things are probably figuring it out. Now he's going to try to connect the dots. Actually, I can't connect the dot. I was trying to think of a similar statement that can be made within the confines of the church, confines of Christianity. Is there one of those no-duh statements, right? You go into a store and the guy says, everything must be sold. Well, you automatically think that they're trying to push things by giving you discounts. But all he's telling you is an axiom. It's the definition of a store, right? It's the definition, and it's a pure truth. We have a store. The object of the store, or the purpose of the store, excuse me, is to sell things. And so I make this statement, I present this axiom to you, everything must be sold. True. Is there a similar statement that we can throw out in the name of the church? Name of Christianity. This is our purpose, and everything we do must be to serve that purpose. See where I'm going with that? I'm going to leave it there because that's not what I wanted to talk about, but I just wanted to present that. And it's one of those thoughts that I hope that it's a seed that can be planted right now. Let's think about that, okay? And we'll get to that. But today what I'd like to do is talk about this idea of usurping. Usurping something. Let me first define that. Actually, it's an interesting word. I learned this word pretty late in life, actually. I should have known it. You know, it's one of those words where you learn a new word and then you see it everywhere. It's like very similar to like you see a new kind of car or you buy a new car and then you notice that everybody else is driving that same car, that same thing that you have. Well, the same way. I learned about usurp, this word usurp, and then just heard it being used here and there. Anyway, it was interesting because I learned it from my spiritual father, Archbishop Vache. One day we were talking about the problem of evil. Why is there evil in the world? Okay, if God is good, why does he allow evil? Why does he tolerate evil? And I guess a more fundamental question, why is there evil in the first place in the world? And that was my first exposure to the word usurp. He said that evil is there because man, in his selfishness, has usurped the power of God, or the authority of God. Think of it in those terms, okay? When evil comes, we as human beings usurp that power of God for what? For our self-glorification. Usurp, that's the word. It literally means it's to take illegally or by force. When you usurp something, you illegally take it. The Garden of Eden story is a classic example. In fact, I believe that's what in the context in which he used that word. By the way, this little incident, our dialogue about usurping and evil, why evil, it comes from some interviews that I did 35 years ago. Anyway, that is in a book called The Armenian Genocide and the Problem of Evil. I'll put a link on today's show notes so you could check out, and you could, because that's not where I'm going, but it's an interesting little read. It's a very quick read, but pretty in-depth when you look at the different people who are answering it. It also talks about where our Armenian church was theologically in response to evil back 35 years ago. Anyway, usurp, it means to take illegally or by force. And think about in the context of the Garden of Eden, what happens? God creates everything. He says, these are the laws, and what does human being do? What does the man do? What does the woman do? Says that for my own self purposes, I will go against the authority. I will take that authority to make my own decisions, and this is how I will move forward. So usurp technically means to take illegally or by force. And I was thinking about this last weekend when we celebrated an incredible event in the life of the Christian church. And that event is called the Transfiguration of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, back in the 4th century, when St. Gregory the Illuminator came to Armenia, and the one little saying that every Armenian knows, the first Christian nation. Well, when Armenia became the first Christian nation, it wasn't an overnight process. And there was a lot of pagan and a lot of heathen practices. And there was a goddess named Aslig for whom there was all kinds of rituals, including a ritual bath that included water. And St. Gregory the Illuminator had taken many of the Christian feasts and replaced the heathen, the pagan feasts, with these Christian feasts. And not only St. Gregory the Illuminator, everybody did it. I mean, back in, think about the old Christmas idea, that Saturnalia, or the pagan feast of the birth of the sun, S-U-N, sun, was so big around December, end of December. And Christmas came along and they said, hey, let's change it over. Here's a nice Christian feast. We'll celebrate the birth of the S-O-N sun, right? And same thing in Armenia. St. Gregory the Illuminator had his work cut out for him. And one of the big pagan feasts was this feast of Vartavar. it was dedicated to the goddess Aslig. And St. Gregory the Illuminator said, okay, we're going to transpose that feast. We're going to put the Feast of Transfiguration there. And this particular feast will be celebrated on the day that traditionally people would celebrate Vartavar. Vartavar literally means to decorate with roses. And they would decorate with roses. And along with that came this tradition of dousing, squirting, I was going to say, but literally drenching people, just pouring water on one another. It started off as a very innocent little fun project. Today, if you stand in the middle of Armenia, you will be drenched. You will be drenched, even if you wear the wildest coats in the middle of July. I can't imagine anybody doing that. It's probably more of a refreshing alternative to the humid, hot temperature in Armenia. But very, very popular custom is this Vartavar custom, to go over and to just squirt people with water and to spread the goodness of that water feast. Now, what happened last week for the first time that I saw that the Transfiguration Feast was being usurped by Vartavar? And in fact, so much so that I saw one of the churches put out a little bulletin and said that we have the Divine Liturgy being celebrated every Sunday. Instead of going to the Divine Liturgy this Sunday, please join us at the park where we will be celebrating the Vartavar feast. And I'm thinking, whoa, you mean there's something more important than Jesus Christ, and that's to hit each other with water balloons? Is that it? Is that what's more important? I mean, think about it for a moment, right? So that was one that I saw. The other one, I saw a video which went pretty viral. It was on social media about what's going on in Armenia and the Vartavar celebration. And in that celebration, it alluded to many of the churches in the area where you could go and get drenched in water and have fun with your family. And there was absolutely no mention of the Feast of the Transfiguration. It had been usurped. And I know people are going to argue, well, you usurped it first from Vartavar. Yeah, but here we are. We want to claim to be this Christian country, this Christian religion, and now you're reverting back, right, to this water feast. And actually, those of you who followed my ministry, those of you who have been at my church, it's one of the most fun things that I do. All year long, we hit each other with water. We get these big roses, Vartavar. Vart means rose. We get roses and we drench them in water. And we shower people with the water. It is so much fun. But it's in the context of Vartavar. This time it had been completely usurped. There was no mention of the Transfiguration. Did I say Vartavar? Yeah, it was in the context of the Transfiguration that we would celebrate the Vartavar feast. And what I'd like to do today is share with you some passages, some of that Bible study that I wasn't able to get out there. Now, the Bible study should be up on the internet today, tomorrow, next day. It'll be up there. And it's a kind of just a general outline of what I really wanted to talk about. And unfortunately, time didn't allow. And I don't think time's going to allow us over here. But it'll be a little bit of a broader understanding of how Transfiguration and Vartavar play together and should play together in our lives. Should, in the sense that we have this incredible tradition, yes, that predates Christianity. And yes, water does have its function. But also, it has no meaning by itself unless that water can be taken in the context of a spirituality which ties us in with a living water, which ties us in with the waters of all eternity. And if you can do that, if you can put those two things together, then you have an understanding of what Armidoxy is about, really, about how you can get to be that first Christian nation and how Christianity can live in your lives in a very, very special, spiritual, and I want to even say in a mystical way. So that's where I want to go today. We'll do that in the second portion of today's show. But right now it is the time for the song of the day. Every week I pick out a song today's no different. And in fact, it's a song that I've played before, but I want to do it for two reasons. One of them, because I love it. It's called Vartavar. It's Vartavar Up in the Mountains. And it is being performed by Digran Hamasyan. Second reason, I dedicate it to my dear friend Aram, listening over there in Armenia. Wishing him all the best again. Digran Hamasyan, Vartavar Live in the Mountains. Enjoy. Digran Hamasyan playing Vartavar in the Mountains. Yeah, isn't that great? Isn't that just a great piece of music? There will be a link on today's show notes, not only to this song, but all of his good music. This is an artist you need to connect with. I mean, I just really, really like all of his music. This one in particular kind of fits in with the day, Vartavar. We're commemorating, remembering Vartavar, and also remembering one of the major feasts of the Armenian Church. That is the Transfiguration. And when we come back, that's where we're going to go. We're going to go down that road to Vartavar via the Transfiguration and vice versa. There are five, count them, five major feast days in the church. We've been taught this from day one. Yes, there are five major feast days. There is, of course, Christmas, the nativity, the birth of Christ, right? And for Armenians, that also coincides with the baptism of Christ. That's number one. Number two is Easter, feast of feasts, right? Resurrection. In the calendar year, the third one happens to be the one we just celebrated last Sunday, the Transfiguration. And there's two more coming up this year. One of them is the Assumption of St. Mary, the Ostfaldzin. And in September, we remember the Elevation of the Holy Cross. Five major feast days. And you know what's interesting? When I first started ministry, there was such a resentment about taking communion. This was something you just did not do every Sunday. You would go to the Divine Liturgy, but you wouldn't commune. And some of you old-timers will remember that that was the way many people approached it. You'd go to the Divine Liturgy, you'd go to this big celebration of a banquet, and you wouldn't eat. You wouldn't participate. And early on in my ministry, it was really one of the big points that I try to drive home in every congregation I was at, that it's okay if you're, and I never forget, I once asked Archbishop Didon Nersoyan, who was, you know, basically the encyclopedia of the Armenian Church, and his answer was so profound. He said, he kind of had this little snicker too. He said, if your body's hungry, you feed it. If your soul is hungry, you feed that as well. Just made sense. I mean, like, yeah, why do you go to church? It's to commune. Why do we have the Divine Liturgy? It's to commune. And one of the arguments people would give me at the time, I'll never forget this, they'd say, you only take communion five times a year. That's the rule of the Armenian Church. To which I'd first ask, and where is this written? Where do you find this rule? Five times? But the bigger question is, why do the liturgy? If there's nobody communing, why do the Divine Liturgy? And it's still one of those questions that people have, and I too have, you know, in some of the most sacred spots on earth. Namely, I just had a friend who just returned from Jerusalem, and she was at the Tomb of Christ, where early in the mornings, 4 a.m, the Divine Liturgy is said, sometimes with no one there because it's inside of a locked area. You say, okay, you're doing the Divine Liturgy, and for, well, you argue, well, the priest is doing it for himself, and he represents a group of people. Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice little stretch, okay? Anyway, many people would argue with me that it's only five times a year. And I'd say, well, what are those five times? And sure enough, everybody knew the five major feast days. And this one, Vartavar, people did not know as well as the other ones. Most everybody knows that Christmas and Easter have to be those two, the top two, right? Christmas and Easter. And then people would know that one to the Blessed Mother, to Ostfaldzin, the Assumption, because of the grapes in their head. And they knew that there was something called Chach, the cross, but very few would remember this one, the Transfiguration. They would remember more of Vartavat. And then the question is, well, why aren't you in church to commune at least on these five major feast days? Why have you brought it down to two? Basically, we find a very simple story that my grandma used to tell us about Nasser ed-Din Hoxha. He was a cool cleric who always had an answer for everything. And actually, he came from the same village that my grandmother came from, Sidvi Hisar. And he has a story where somebody came up to him and said, "May I borrow your rope?" And Hoxha said, "No, I'm sorry. I'm using the rope. I've tied some water in the back." The person asked him, "Well, what does that mean? How could you tie water?" To which Hoxha answered, "If I don't want to lend you my rope, I could give you any excuse I want to." And so too, if people don't want to go to church, if they don't want to commune, they could give you any excuse they want to. And that's why later on in my life, no longer the young priest, I realized that there are people that just don't want to go. They don't want to commune. They don't want to be bothered. And they'll find some kind of excuse, right? Whatever it is. And I'm not here to check people's excuses. Those are things that they need to reconcile with in their own personal life. It's between them and God. What I do need to do is at least provide you with the information of what the Christian is all about, what the liturgy is all about, and why we celebrate that liturgy every Sunday, and particularly on these major feast days, how it is wrong, completely wrong, especially on major feast day, to allow Vartavar to usurp the place and the authority of the Holy Divine Liturgy, the Badarak. So most everyone knows that Vartavar, this feast with water in it, somewhere along the way, you know, it's connected to this pagan goddess named Aslik. And by being pagan, it predates Christianity. Very good. Very good. You know, it is a water-based thing. Now, what is the Transfiguration? Now, this is an interesting story that appears in three of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the synoptic traditions. Let's take a look at one of them. It doesn't matter. They're all very similar, except to the degree of brilliance. And only by looking at them will you understand what I mean by that, the degree of brilliance. But there's a couple things that happen. Why don't we take the Matthew tradition, okay? In Matthew, this is from Matthew chapter 17, we read that Jesus took three of his disciples with him to a mountaintop, and there he transfigured in the presence of Peter, John, and James. Transfiguring means that he radiated, right? His figure was transformed. He radiated this incredible light. And in the midst of that, two figures appeared next to him. One was Elijah, and the other was Moses. And Peter, one of the disciples, in the midst of all this spectacular stuff going on, looks up and says, "Lord, do you want us to make some tents for you so you could sleep? One for you, one for Elijah, one for Moses." And as they were talking, this cloud from overhead came and said, "This is my beloved son, who I'm very pleased with. This is the voice of the Father. This is my beloved son. Listen to him." Okay? So this is basically what's happening here. The story of the Transfiguration. And like I said, really what differs in the three synoptic accounts is the degree of brilliance. One says that he's clothes were shining, were so white that the greatest bleach on earth couldn't bleach something that brilliant and that white. The other one says that he was as white as snow. Anyway, you could imagine that this is completely a spectacular event. Well, what is this event all about? What's going on over here? Well, let's look at the two people, first of all, that are with him. And then I'm going to go back to the Transfiguration. There's two people. One is Elijah and one is Moses. Moses, we all know, Ten Commandments, right? Charlton Heston. He gave us the Ten Commandments. God gave the Ten Commandments through Moses. Moses takes the people through the wilderness. But probably you don't know about the other guy, Elijah, who is a prophet. Now, every Sunday when the divine liturgy happens, the priest ascends, goes up to the altar, where he reenacts actually the passion of our Lord Jesus Christ. He goes up there, and this is his sacrifice. There is the passion of our Lord which takes place, and it is done on the arms of a cross. And at the end of this passion play, the priest descends from the altar and comes down to among the people. First words that he says, Gadarumen markareitz yev orinatsan. This is the completion of the law and the prophets. Gadarum, completion, orinats, the law, orenk, the law, markareis, markare, the prophets. Every Sunday, there's this pronouncement that what takes place in the Divine Liturgy, what Christ did was a completion of the laws and the prophets. And here we see, at the Transfiguration Feast, these two characters, Moses, the law, and Elijah, the prophets. Now, Elijah, like I said, few people know what it is. The meaning of his word is, my God is Yahweh. My God is Jah. It's interesting, this word Yahweh, I don't even like using it because nobody really knows exactly how it's supposed to be pronounced. It's four consonants put together. The closest to it in the English language would be a YHWH. And the reason why there's no vowels in it, because it wasn't supposed to be pronounced. The name of God was not supposed to be pronounced. Conjecture, people think that it was probably pronounced like Yahweh. Yahweh is what became Jehovah. Now, Elijah means my name is God. Elijah, according to tradition, was supposed to come before the Christ was to come. And this is why Jesus points to John the Baptist. John the Baptist came, a voice crying out in the wilderness. Now, there's another little bit of tidbit information that you should know about Elijah. He's one of the characters in the Old Testament who did not die. There are two characters in the Old Testament. One is Elijah, and the other one is Enoch. Enoch and Elijah did not die. These two were transposed, were, you know, like a vacuum, taken up to heaven. And the Armenian church celebrates these two. Actually, you'd be surprised, more often than you might know. If you attend the Armenian church, there is a small little requiem service called Hokiankis, which mistakenly takes place on Sundays because people wouldn't go on other days. But this Hokiankis service includes a song called The Eternal Jerusalem, Iverin Yerusalem. And in there, two people, two characters are remembered. Ud Yenovk Yev Yerias. This is Enoch and Elijah, the two people who did not taste death. They are walking around Arav Nagerb. Technically, it means in the form of a dove, but it's more to try to conjure up the image that with this beautiful form, let's say. They're in a beautiful form, in a beautiful state. They are beyond death. And we ask for the soul of the person who has passed away to be united with all those who came before and have found a unique place in the kingdom. Okay, now, Elijah and Moses are with Jesus. And Jesus radiates this incredible light. I want you to think about what that light is. Go to the first page of the Old Testament. The first page of creation. What do we read? In the beginning, God said, what? The first day of creation. He said, let there be light. let there be light. And there was light. He said it was good. Now, what is that light? I mean, it's not sunlight. Everything that you see, daytime or nighttime, is because of the sun. You know that, right? Even things that you see at night are based on the reflection of the sun on, say, the moon or other things that reflects down over here. And we see. If you've ever been in an area where there is no electricity, and on that day when there is no moon, it's pitch black. You can't see in front of you. I remember in Rwanda when I was in one of the villages, and 8 o'clock at night, everyone went to sleep that particular night, and I thought that was unusual. You know, like, don't they have a nightlight? No, they don't. If there's no electricity, there's nothing you can do. It's pitch black. Of course, you know, on nights that there's a moon, yeah, you're lucky. But if there's no electricity, you can't see anything. Everything that we see is because of the sun. And the sun warms us. It's the light that we understand. And so when it says in the beginning, God said, let there be light, what is he talking about? Not the sun, because according to that story, if you follow that story, it's not until the third or fourth day. But he said, let there be light. And Jesus radiates this light. It is a light that is at the very beginning. It is a light that goes beyond our understanding of light. It is the divine. It is the divine realm. And so for that moment, Jesus was radiating his divinity. He was radiating his divinity to the world. And that's why it's so weird that Peter, in the midst of this incredible event that's taking place, stops and says, hey, do you want me to go get some tents for you? Instead of saying, like, wow, look at this. What's going on? Jesus was radiating the God light. Now, I want to read a little bit more of the creation story, or the creation story as it's written, commonly called the Old Testament, right? The first day, this light, without a sun or a moon or anything. Second day, there's a firmament. Listen to what it says. God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of, are you ready for this? The waters. What waters? I mean, there's a light, and all of a sudden, there's a firmament amidst the waters. Now, are you getting this? Because, look, the waters connects us with what? With Vartabar, right? There's a water, pre-creation water, so to speak. Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and separated the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. Is your head spinning? Wait, the second day. So the first day, let there be light. Second day is let there be firmament amidst the waters. Third day, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called the seas. And God saw that it was good, and God said, let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding, and so on and so on. Now, this is why I tell you, you know, don't get into this literal translation, because, you know, people are going to find holes, and what you do is you end up arguing and fighting a cause which is not worth arguing or fighting about. If you believe that Jesus is your Savior, that's your business, right? You know it. You don't need to prove that to anybody else. If you feel like evangelizing that, that's, again, your business. But you don't need to prove who you are or what your thinking is. If you believe that God created all of creation, the universe, that's your business and it's your right. And somebody else can challenge you on that. And if you go over here and start picking apart and looking at it in terms of this verse, that verse, you're going to get in trouble because you're not taking the entire story. The entire story is one of God, so to speak, turning on the switch and saying, here is creation. And so we get bogged down by these details and we start thinking about days and how many days, when all along there were no days at all, right? Without a sun, you can't measure the days. How do we measure 24 hours? 24 hours is the time it takes for us to spin on our axis. And we have arbitrarily selected this base 24 to represent the, actually it's a base 60 system, right? The minutes, and we figure out that it takes such and such time. It's one revolution around on our axis is 24 hours. One revolution of the moon around our planet is about roughly 28 days. One revolution of our Earth around the sun is roughly 365 days, right? And so these numbers start playing into our lives and we start saying, oh, there's an order to the system. And that, to me, is really more of a proclamation about the presence of God in our lives than, say, these words where people will start picking apart and saying, well, look at this and this and this. For instance, we talk about the water. The water is pre-creation, right? Before there's creation, there's water there, right? There's somehow there's, it's there. It's saying it right there. And did you know that scientists will tell you? I mean, Google this if you don't believe me. Only 5% of the Earth's oceans have been explored. 95% of the Earth's oceans go unexplored. There are mountains underneath the ocean surface that are taller from base to top than the largest peaks, say in Mount Everest, that we see here on the planet. Imagine that. Does that get your wonder going? Does that get your sense of imagination and discovery going? It certainly does mine. 95% of the ocean has not been discovered. In fact, in one of the oceans, they went down, they took down these incredible machines. What many years ago was impossible now is possible because of technology, because of where science is leading us. They took down machines to where the sun does not shine. In other words, the sunlight, it is impossible to get down to those areas. And accordingly, according to the definitions that we have, you need sunlight for photosynthesis, right? To produce, you need sunlight and the oxygen is produced and oxygen is necessary for life and so on and so on. They have found organisms, they have found life in these lower regions of the ocean where there is no sun, where according to science it's impossible that there could be life. Now, to me, that's a bigger definition, a bigger claim that we have about the uniqueness of God. And what we do is we start arguing with one another over the small little things. And Christians, unfortunately, really, have fallen into this trap. They will argue creation. A Christian should be arguing the power of God in our lives, Jesus Christ as Savior. The story of creation comes to us from the Hebrew Scriptures. As I said earlier, what's called the Old Testament. It's nice. It's good. It's a definition. It's what Moses wrote down. Because, you know what, honestly, let me tell you this, right? 3,000 years ago, if Moses got up and he said, okay, let me teach you guys about photosynthesis, and this is how life, and this is how oxygen comes in, and we process the oxygen and carbon dioxide. They would look at him, what are you talking about? What? What? Who is this guy? But a very simple way of explaining is God said, let there be light. Let the waters be separated. Let the seas bring forth life. Let there be vegetation on the planet. Let us create man in our own image. It's a beautiful way of describing what you and I believe. Not about this is the order, days and nights, about the suns, but we do believe that there is a grand creator. We do believe that there is something beyond ourselves out there that is responsible for this. And we believe that we cannot usurp the authority, the power of that creator. That's when we get into trouble. And that's what's happening right now. We've allowed some of our traditions and our customs to usurp the bigger story, the story of faith. Like, to me, I'm always troubled when Christians will go out on a limb to support and talk about some of these stories, which are nice stories. They bring people to faith. I agree, okay? But that's not what our faith is about. Our faith is about a creator who gives us this ultimate power of love and loves us so much that he gives us his begotten son so that he shows us that power of love in our lives, the capability for each and every one of us to be that shining light. Because for in fact, Jesus said, I am the light of the world, and he radiated that light at the transfiguration. And in fact, it is the same Jesus who turned it around and turned to us and said, you are the light of the world, and you need to shine your light in this world. You see, the beauty of the Transfiguration Feast can be explored in many dimensions, but it is beautiful within the Armenian tradition because it coincides with Vartavar. And so you have the two essential elements right in your hand. You have light and you have water. The two things we talked about that were what? Are you getting there? Are you getting there? Do you understand where I'm going? Listen to where what we were talking about according to what we read, right? The two elements, the light and the water that were pre-creation. They were just there. Let there be light. Light. What is that light? Let the waters be separated. What water? Who created the water? What about oxygen and hydrogen? Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. What? No. Doesn't work. There's no two parts. There's no one parts. Let there be light. Let the waters bring forth. And on this feast of Transfiguration and Vartavar, we have an opportunity to celebrate these two elements in our lives, that we become the light of the world, as Jesus promised, that we understand that water is, well, what is it? It's the cleansing formula. It's not that difficult, folks. We make these things difficult. We usurp the authority of God, and we start creating things that aren't really there. Water is a very basic element. You look at the story of Nicodemus coming to Jesus by night. And what does Jesus do? He throws it all around. And he says, Nicodemus, you need to be born again. You need to be born of water and the Spirit. Now we have said that water is, being born of the water is baptism. What is baptism? It is something that John the Baptist was doing. And in a sense, it was inaugurated in New Testament tradition. Why? Because we don't find baptism in Old Testament. It's not there. Some of the sects particularly the Essene community. You know, Qumran, there is the, you've heard of the Qumran, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and this community at Qumran, they would have this ritual bath, baptism. And John the Baptism, there's thought that he was part of this community. And he was baptizing, the ritual bath of being born again, of starting new, of putting away your past and beginning from that day forward. And through the centuries, that baptism has been ritualized. And so now we have certain laws and regulations that regulate the manner in which baptism takes place. But the element of baptism is what? Is the water. It's the beginning. It's the cleansing. And so we have these two things. We have the light, which is the purity. It's the divine energy. And we have the water, which is the cleansing. Together we unite them, and you have this incredible tradition. Vartavar, transfiguration. These things coming together. I want you to believe that I have so many notes about this. It's just a beautiful, beautiful topic. It just had to come out. I've done many sessions on this throughout the years and gotten into it very, very deep. This time it came out because of what I saw, what I was feeling very bad, that the transfiguration was basically forgotten about last week as more and more Armenians went after celebrating with water balloons, with water hoses, with water cannons, a pagan festival, which really doesn't get you much of anything except wet. Put that pagan festival with its meanings, with its elements, with water, in the context of the transfiguration, in the context of who we are, and understand a new life, understand a cleansing, understand the ability to shine that light, and to be in contact with something that was from the beginning of time. And why do you think I tell you every time when I talk about Armodoxy, we are not connecting to a Jesus from 2,000 years ago who appeared in Palestine. We are connecting to a Jesus who is the Christ, who said, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." "The Father and I are one," he said. "Before Abraham was, I am," he said. Jesus Christ is there at the beginning. When he said, "Let there be light," Jesus Christ is saying, "I am that light." And he shines that at the transfiguration. Listen, check out today's show notes. I'll put a few other notes on there. There'll be some Bible passages you can look at. I wish I could talk more about this. There's really, really some great stuff that I have in my notes. And maybe what I'll do is I'll, you know, that book that we're going to be writing, the Armodoxy Manual, it's definitely going to be in there. But I'll try to share as much as I can through our show notes today. Do check it out. Here is Susie to make an announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armodoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Water is the essential element in our lives. They say that you could live without food for several days, but you can't live without water. Likewise, it's not just about drinking water, but the, you know, the clean water today is responsible for so much of the advances that we've made as a human species, the cleanliness, the hygiene, doing away with many of the diseases. It is so important to every aspect of our lives. And I bring this up because, you know, what we're trying to do here at Epostle, at In His Shoes, is really get to the nitty-gritty of what is really essential. And I think today, if you understood where we were going with it, it's about not fighting the fights that don't matter. It's about understanding our place within the system of what we call life and human existence, and understanding that we have a very important role. And that role is, it becomes more and more important as we take on responsibility for the earth around us, for the beautiful things that are there in our lives. That's the invitation that I give to you, to take responsibility. And one of the ways, of course, is to become a partner with us in this ministry. It's not just about this podcast when you contribute to In His Shoes. It's about the global outreach that we do. It's about reaching out to places that you otherwise wouldn't think about. For instance, last week we were out there and we were going to be providing hearing aids in Armenia. We're going to be working with the Starkey Foundation. We're going to be going out to Armenia and sharing with almost 2,000 people these hearing aids that custom made for them, each person getting their own. These are people that otherwise would be in a world of silence. And so when we walk in their shoes, you understand what that silence might be, and you say, I reject that silence. Let me do something about it. And it's true of anything else. And when we do our work for domestic violence, it's walking in the feet, in the shoes of those women who have gone through some of these troubles, some of these difficulties, and you say that no one should live like that when we talk about education or whatever it is. And that's the invitation I'm making to you. There's a lot of places that you can support. Inner Shoes is a means by which we get this message out. We talk about Armadoxy, but also do the work that is so necessary in this world. It's a small way of doing something, but it's our way of doing it. So I invite you to become a partner with us. As Susie said, get on the In His Shoes website, hit the donate button. Your donations go a long way. I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. The whole gang is here today. And Ken and Susie, they're all waving. I don't know what's going on behind that glass over there. But something's going on. Oh, okay. Never mind. Okay. Anyway, we have a lot of fun, and it's always fun to have you join us. I want to thank you for being here. Join us at all the usual stops, inhisshoes.org, epostle.net, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever we're at, do join us. And drop me a line, too, feedback@epostle.net. Epostle, easy to remember. That's Apostle with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off balance. Top limit.